My Family Thinks I'm Crazy, a podcast where I, your host, try to give you some tips on how you can explain all this weird, wild, crazy conspiracy stuff to the people you love most. Because that's what I've been trying to do for the past 10 years with no success. I've been telling everybody that our government is shady, but every time I do, my family thinks I'm crazy. The hollow earth, UFOs, aliens invading, fluoride in the water, they spray our skies daily. When I talk about these things, they think I'm crazy. There's no escaping anymore the evil that we're facing. Illuminati mind control, they're sacrificing babies. The end of days, but anyways, my family thinks I'm crazy.
What, they don't want to listen to you?
No, they don't want to listen. They don't want to hear it. They're just like, oh, here we go, Mark. Off again with your
Mark being Mark again.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's the thing about podcasts is when you're on the air, and it's like therapy, you know. If I can't talk to my family about this stuff, I'll talk to you, Matt, and all our listeners.
You know, just tell your whole podcast.
Yeah. So who are we talking about today, Matt? P. Diddy in prison, Drake defamed for arguably justified reasons. It seems the old guard of big music is being discarded and set aside to usher in the next phase, the new face, the androgenic, transhuman, substanceless, electro-popified era of the hyperbolic radical left, and on the right stage, the alt-mighty country minstrels of right-wing placation and degeneration. What is music without a true message? Where are the independent artists? Is folk still for the folk or just the woke? Returning to share his latest music-based deep dives is Izzy N. Griffin, who joins me, Mystic Mark, here on the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy this conversation with Izzy Griffin.
I've just been, just honestly been grinding, trying to build the Patreon, trying to uncover more and more truths about some of our favorite and not so favorite musicians and the music industry as a whole. And also I finished an album, which I consider my first real, like sort of real music release. I had like a little like EP demo thing I put out this summer, but this is like the big one. I'm trying not to self-sabotage it because that's like what I tend to do when I have like something really I put a lot of work into, is I like throw my hands in the air and I'm like, fuck it, we'll not do it live. We're not going to put this out. And so I'm like trying to stay on the like disciplined straight and narrow of like, no, this is it. I'm putting it out. It's go time. I'm really excited. So
what's the album named?
So I'm naming it Glue, but I'm stylizing it at like G-L-U with an umlaut M. So it has like the U with the two dots over it. Yeah, and I'm getting real like, real heady, real esoteric with it. A lot of everything behind it has a lot of meaning. And I think a lot of the promotion that I want to do with it is like, I'm going to be doing like videos breaking down every single thing from like, the font sizing that I'm using to like the imagery that I'm using for the videos and everything. Because I feel like lately, like there's been this trend of artists will allow their audience to like dictate what their music means. And it's like this really interesting thing I've been like autistically studying lately. And it's like driving me fucking crazy. And it's like,
yeah.
It's really weird because, like, I don't know, and I'm not, like, trying to disparage anyone's art or anything, But a lot of artists are doing this now. And
do
it's
you think
like
this is the algorithm having an effect on, because I know that like obviously social media has affected artists for quite a while now, multiple decades, but it seems like the algorithm is the newest phenomena that's been shaping things. Like people see, okay, this is what the algorithm likes, this is what my audience like, let's just play it safe and go with that. Is that kind of what you're seeing?
So there is like a part of that for sure. I think I'm starting to like compartmentalize the music industry in my own head, and I want to do a video on it eventually. But as far as that goes, I feel like there's content and then there's art, right? And I feel like lately with the algorithm, like you're saying, those two things are becoming so conflated that there needs to be like a hard distinction. Because like when I watch like, let's just say like, you know, a Tarantino film, right? That has a different feel than like a Marvel movie. Now, obviously, they're both kind of art, I guess, but one is more like Hollywood blockbuster fun. And then one of them is like, oh, there's some like gritty substance here or whatever. And you get into those annoying, like, what's real art conversations with that. But like, I feel like with the new sort of wave of like meme rap and like these kind of meme music genres, the algorithm dictating a lot of that. And it's like, it gets into like, what is even music? Like, what is even art, or what is even music as an art form now? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been thinking about this a lot lately. As far as it pertains to this show, some people might have noticed the AI songs that I use. And surprisingly, and I think I made it pretty clear to the audience that it's AI, and now they might recognize it. But at first, I was getting, and I might still get these comments where people will write, who's the artist that made that song? And it's, you know, I don't know if that says anything about my ability to create AI songs, but the AI songs in general are pretty overall bad. But there's the rare exception where you're like, oh, that's actually interesting sounding. So in general, it seems like the definition of music has become blurred more than ever. And, you know, people have been talking about this since the first digital instruments, right? When they switched from analog to digital, this conversation began. And now it seems like digital is, it's completely taken over, it sounds like.
Yeah, 100%. It's like, and it's really what I'm trying to, I'm trying to do this blend of like accepting the way things are going, right? So like, you know, I would never not have an open mind about using something in my own music, like AI or something. I don't use any, but if something sounded like amazingly cool, like I know that now they can like take a sample and they can like extract the stems using AI, which before you would have to like find the literal recordings from the session, which is like, you know, obviously very difficult to do. So that's pretty interesting. But I know with what I'm trying to do is I'm really trying to make everything really intentional and really approach it almost as if it's like a movie, you know, like I feel like right now, I'm going to use Tyler, the Creator as an example. And I really enjoy Tyler, the Creator's music. I really think he's a great artist. I think he has a lot of interesting things that he's done. But what I notice with him is I call him the Dr. Seuss of the music industry. And the reason I call him this is because he will create these amazing like soundscapes with these amazing set designs. And the color work is crazy. It looks so cool. But there's no like depth to it. And I know that sounds like an asshole or something, or like condescending, or like I know it all. But I've taken like hours and looked into this dude's stuff. And it's so funny because every album of his, he has a character that's associated with the album. And the character will have a name. So like one of his albums, the character's name is Cherry Bomb, and the album is called Cherry Bomb. and there's these loud colors associated with it and the soundscape. And then, you know, for the shows, there's like a whole set design and everything. And like, the more I look into it, the character is just like a costume and it doesn't really mean anything, to the point to where like I've like deep dove it and there's like nothing to it. And so what I find is I find that his audience is doing the legwork of like informing everybody what it's about. So there will be like hour long dissertations, like talking about what the album is about and what the character is. And it's really genius on his part because he just is like making cool shit. And then everybody's like, actually, this is actually the color work here. And it's like, no, dude, he just is making cool shit. And you guys are doing the legwork of like creating its meaning. So I am trying to do the inverse of that, of where it's like, I'm going to explain the intentionality behind every single thing I'm doing and all of this stuff. I think that it's an interesting take because when you go back to artists like David Bowie or Bob Dylan or something, and I have my qualms with all those guys, but like when you look up, you know, David Bowie has a character named Ziggy Stardust. When you look up Ziggy Stardust, there's a whole story behind Ziggy and what he was, and he was trying to save Earth and all this stuff. And when you look up, like, you know, Tyler, the Creator's character, Saint Chroma, it's like a guy wearing a costume. And it's like, wait, no, what is it though? And it's like, well, Saint Chroma. That's what it is. And it's like, no, like, what is the store? And there's just nothing. It's just, I don't know. It's just something that
it's.
Yeah, go. Sorry.
It seems like what you're talking about too is a little bit of the forum effect or the fan fiction effect, the blog effect, where like art, content creation, the lines have been blurred so much where like if you like a thing like, you know, let's throw a random pop culture example out there. Like, if you like Lord of the Rings, there's probably a dozen areas on the internet, niches, where you can go and find other people who love Lord of the Rings and have gone and written, like, you know, whole side quests of the hobbits and the backstory of, you know, the wizard Gandalf.
Yeah, right?
Like, so obviously, I'm not into that particular or really anything other than conspiracy, but yeah, it seems like that's what they're playing into a little bit, where like the internet has taken this like life of its own with a, like, do you think that could even exist back in the day, you know, where people were maybe looking for more out of the content they were getting? Like, now Saint Chroma works, or something like Cherry Bomb works, because people, seems like, have a lower attention span. I don't mean to sound so cynical, but people have more of a low attention span towards the content that they follow. They're not really sitting with it and digesting it in a long span the way somebody might, you know, be a fan of a novelist or a poet.
See, and I think that's what it is, which is where my like kind of respect comes into play for like Tyler, the Creator, because it's like, that is, it's extremely creative. And to understand that your fans are going to, as you say, fanfic the character, it's like, I can just make dope shit and then they just have the meaning. Like, I would, like, that's cool. So, yeah, I think that is a lot of it. And I think the attention span comes into play. And I think that a lot of the way the algorithms work is very, like, you have to catch the eye. You have to. And you have 2 seconds to do it, or someone's scrolling to the next video or whatever, right? So, I think that is definitely at play here, because, like, the perfect example, right? And I think it's funny you say novelist or poet, because again, with Tyler, the Creator, he has this character, and the concept of the album is it's like luxury, and he goes by Baudelaire, right? And there's this guy who's like a university professor, and he did like a literal five hours talking about how Tyler, the Creator's album, Call Me If You Get Lost, is a breaking down of the poet Baudelaire. And it's this long thing. And the guy talks about how like all these lyrics mean this. And he's like, I went on a vacation with my family and I made them listen to the album and I broke it down involving the French poet Baudelaire. And Tyler, the Creator, has these photos of him in Paris. And it's, and right here, he's at the Louvre. And it's like this like super crazy breakdown. And somebody asks Tyler, the Creator, about it. And he goes, oh, no, I use Baudelaire because it's from A Series of Unfortunate Events. It's the main character's last name. I just think it's really cool. And so it's like, oh, wow, there, these people.
He had no idea that there was even a poet with that name, right? Is that kind of what?
Yeah, had no idea. He was like, I didn't even, he's like, that's cool. I don't know. No, that's not what it means, though. So it's like.
Right. Well, and I think that it's like this cult of culture that has gone on with anything that gets that sort of mainstream blessing, right? Which Tyler, the Creator, from his first debut single was pretty popular, right? I remember like the cockroach music video where he's got like the cockroaches crawling all over him. Somebody in my high school, I think in lunch, was like, dude, check this out on iPod Touch. You know, we were like, yeah, whoa, man, music videos in the palm of your hand. But yeah, Tyler, the Creator, in a sense, is just using these in a very superficial sense, these like, I don't know, pastiches of characters. But is there any esoteric significance to any of this? Like, do you think it's really that, I mean, mundane is what you're making it sound like, where he's just like, he's letting the mundanity of it stop there and let people read into it, really, sounds like.
Yeah. So, see, it's interesting, like with Tyler specifically, because it's weird, right? Like there is some esotericism with it because I've gone back and I found photos of Tyler wearing Aleister Crowley t-shirts, and I've found early Odd Future shows would have banners that had Aleister Crowley on them. And Tyler is interesting because in the early part of his career, he very much was trying to get attention. So like you're describing the cockroach, that's like from the Yonkers music video. So he did things to like get attention and shock value and stuff. And I believe that's a lot of it, but there is a lot of legit like esoteric, I call it magic, like that he's doing. And I think of esotericism and I think of magic in a very broad sense, because specifically with Crowley, he sort of like popularized ritualistic magic in like the 20th, which has now transferred into the 21st century. And now people do this form of magic called chaos magic. And essentially what chaos magic is in a really broad sense is if you believe it's magic, it is magic. So Tyler has songs like New Magic Wand. He has these things that he does talk about this kind of stuff. And I have like gone down these rabbit holes where like he uses color a lot, and there actually is, believe it or not, it sounds so stupid, there's a form of magic called color magic. And basically, like when you think of green, what do you think of? Money, you think of nature. You think of red, you think of like blood or health or love or whatever, these certain tropes that we have. So what he does is like he had an album called Igor, and the cover of Igor is pink. And if you inverse the color exactly on the color wheel, like using like digitally, like in Photoshop or something, the exact opposite of that color is the green that he used on his latest album, Chromacopia. So he's using these sort of colors in conjunction with numerology, which is like numerology technically is a form of magic called divination. And basically, what you can do with numerology is you can, you know, like Gary the Numbers Guy and stuff, you've heard of him, where he uses numbers that have specific meanings within like Chinese numerology or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he uses the numbers to like release songs and albums and all that stuff. So
they're universal, you know, their interpretations aren't always universal. For example, in China, the number 4 is symbolizing or related to death or bad luck, whereas in other countries, 4 doesn't hold that sort of weight. But I guess it dawned on me just now, Tyler the Creator is a completely loaded esoteric name. I mean, obviously, the Creator, we're talking about creating in any sense of imagination, is an act of magic. And Tyler is a Masonic term. It's the person who stands guard while a meeting is being conducted. So Tyler, the creator, it's like, yeah, he's guarding the meeting of the creator, and he's using this color magic, which doesn't seem to be veiled very thickly, because chroma obviously means color, and that's in the name of multiple albums you've mentioned already, Saint Chroma, and then this, or maybe not the album, but the concept chroma.
Yeah. Well, and another thing too that's interesting is his mother owns a holistic, like, medicine business. It's like a spa, and they're like African, so they're super into like that sort of holistic magic medicine kind of realm. So it's like really interesting. But like the numerology is interesting too, because I broke down the dates in which he released all of his albums, and all of the like numbers correlate to like what the album signified or how they did. So like, for example, his album Cherry Bomb, the number, I did the math, you know, it's crazy numerology shit, but like the number is 4, which is death. And that album signified the death of his older characters, because he had all these characters he was doing, and none of them have reappeared since. And then, like, you know, with his last several albums, he's released all of them on 8 days. So it's like a money number in Chinese numerology, and they've done extremely well financially. And there's like a bunch of like crazy, super crazy shit with that. So it's like very interesting.
Yeah, no, it's, I think it's definitely been proven in certain circumstances, but it's something I pay attention to with the number of the podcast, particularly, you know, sometimes I'll say, all right, I'm going to keep this guest back a few days because I want them to be on episode, you know, whatever number, right? So yeah, sometimes it works out in interesting ways. This will probably be episode 495 or 494. I don't know.
Nice. I think the first one I was on, I think it was like 369. And I was like,
that makes sense. Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, crazy. Cause I was talking about my near death experience and stuff. And I was like, that's pretty crazy. Yeah, it's so funny. I like have to draw myself back in with the numerology stuff, cause you can get really out in the weeds with it, I feel.
Simple is better. I think from what I've gathered, it seems like it's something that in general, successful people take note of. You have a lot of cases where famous or successful people have noted that they have a lucky number, or they have a number that they pay attention to. And yeah, stay simple though. Pick a number that comes to you and stick with it. Don't go crazy.
The eight
is a good baseline to start with. So you can't go wrong with the infinity symbol. But yeah, I'm curious though, beyond like Tyler, the creator's sort of sympathetic magic, is there anything that he's done as far as like speculative, rumored, you know, how all these artists have tabloid rumors about them? Is there anything that would make us think he's involved in anything darker as far as the occult is concerned? Because the sympathetic magic stuff, it's definitely interesting, but I think most people would look at it and say, oh, well, that's not, you know, like the same as like what they're doing with Balenciaga or these other kind of brands playing with the occult. It seems like it's on the lighter end of the spectrum.
Yeah, and I definitely think it is on the lighter end of the spectrum. I think there's one theory that I have, but before I get there, he was sort of like friends with Diddy, which is very interesting. But he did also like turn down a record deal from Diddy and Jay-Z. So I don't know. I try to like, I've been trying to have more grace with this, because like when I first started, I was super like, this guy's fucking a crazy bitch or whatever. But now I'm trying to be more like even keel. But the one sort of theory I have about him that's really interesting is I was like using ChatGPT to like find certain things about his, because like the first thing I do when I like search, and if I'm looking into artists, I just go like Tyler, the Creator conspiracy, to just see if anything pops up, you know, and I go from there. And one thing that was really interesting is it mentioned that he predicted the death of his friend, Virgil Abloh. And for people who are unaware, Virgil Abloh was the creative director for Louis Vuitton for a short period of time before he died. He got really sick and he died super unexpectedly publicly because he didn't tell anyone he was sick. But the interesting thing with that is I can't remember the exact song. It's in my breakdown on my Patreon, but he predicts the death of Virgil. And it's interesting because when I went and looked at the song, there was no, what it said he did on ChatGPT wasn't in the song. But very interestingly, at the end of the song, there's a sample of Virgil Abloh talking. And he says something along the lines of like, something about being set free. And I'm like, huh, that's like weird. So I did some more digging and I was like, that's like very odd. And I know that there are artists who have retroactively edited their albums. Notably, Kanye West is someone who's done this. And I know that Tyler is obviously associates with Kanye. So I'm like, that's an interesting thing. Maybe he edited it. I don't know. But there is this sample at the end. So I did some more research on that, on Virgil's death. Now, the thing that's really interesting is during this time, Tyler, the Creator, started wearing this ring. And this ring is a blue topaz ring that he was wearing on his right ring finger. And it's like, this ring is like striking. Like, it just like, I remember during the time when Tyler was like, you know, promoting this album and all this stuff, I remember that it was just, it just really stood out. And so I am looking more into it. And I basically was like, I wonder if he's trying to sort of capitalize on Virgil's death in some sort of magic way. Because as you know, and as people who are, you know, into sort of music conspiracy theories, there's a constant theme of people who have these massive blowups having people very close to them die. An example is Kanye West, Eric Clapton's son. Like, I mean, like, there's dozens and dozens of examples. And I obviously, I don't think that, you know, Tyler, Creator, he didn't like kill his friend. His friend was like very sick. But I found this specific Reddit thread that was discussing that you can harness the energy from someone's death into topaz, the stone. So I'm like, huh, that's like really bizarre and really interesting. So I kept looking into it more. And the type of ring that Tyler is wearing that's like super famous, it's called the Eternity Topaz Band. And it's literally the exact kind of rock and stone that you would use if you were trying to do this kind of like esoteric magic. And the super interesting thing is like the person who is discussing in this thread how you would harness death, it was essentially saying that death, when looked at through this like esoteric lens, is looked at as a watery transformation. Now, why specifically it's a watery transformation? I'm assuming because it has something to do with like birth and like the water of the womb or something like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but it was discussing how it's a watery transformation and how death is often affiliated with the astrological sign Scorpio. And basically, Virgil Abloh died super close to Scorpio season, and the ring is blue, symbolizing water, and it's a topaz band. And it just like, it was one of those things where when I was looking at it, I was like, this is like all falling into line. And it's really weird and out there and like fucking crazy. But I'm just like, as someone who looks at him and can see that there's something going on esoterically, I was like, I don't know. I think that something with that is like, I just think it's extremely interesting. I guess I'll put it that way.
No, for sure. I've never heard that about topaz, but I don't doubt it. There's all sorts of strange properties that crystals are supposed to have. And yeah, that's interesting. Topaz. I got to look into that. So Tyler, the Creator, another thing that came to mind is on the level of numerology, T and C, that's 20. And 3, as far as the numerical value of those letters. So his initials are 23, which, you know,
yeah,
they're
there you go.
Interesting number. You know, if there's any number that represents numerology, it's 23.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. The interesting thing, too, that I found while doing this like deep dive was the guy specifically who was like trying to find out if you can harness like the energy of death. He was talking about how he does like a specific kind of research with mice. and how he like handles mice and how he's trying to harness the energy of the mice dying. And so that was like what the guy was asking, right? And so the photo that I found of Tyler, the Creator, wearing the Aleister Crowley shirt, he's also holding a dead mouse. And I was like, this is like fucking bizarre, dude. And I know it sounds so schizo, like I'm making connections that are a little bit weird, but the way that I think, like, I don't believe in coincidences because of the amount of things that I've been through and I've seen, and they're just, coincidences are not coincidences in my opinion. So I was just like, that's like a super interesting thing. This is like a divine thing here being shown to me.
Well, and that's, I think that's how it works. You know, if you go back and listen to our interview with Jake Coetzee, he's considered like the first synchromystic, coined the term. And that's what he describes is this, you know, feeling of being drawn into a pattern, and you sort of are, you know, answering a calling, is in other words how other people have described it. But yeah, for people who might be doubting what you're saying, you explained in our first two conversations your backstory and your near-death experience, your dealings with the music industry. So you're not coming at this from an armchair perspective like most people who talk about this stuff on podcasts where they don't have any insider experience in the music industry. So I think, yeah, give yourself a little bit more credit. And with Tyler, the Creator in particular, I always took him as like a, you know, oh, he's just like a skateboard type rapper, you know, like skateboarder kind of punk rock style rapper. But now with this info, yeah, I'm definitely seeing a whole different side of him, Crowley in for sure. But it's interesting because, you know, metal, MTV, skateboarding, you know, it's all in this realm of like soft annihilation is what I like to call it. Like that whole culture is like, it's about death. And they won't say that. Like guys who love heavy metal, guys who are into that realm, it's all about brotherhood. It's all about yada, yada. But the imagery is death. It's, you know, cannibal corpse and, you know, blood and guts and swords and chainsaws. It's, I mean, it's totally inhuman. So again, no shade to any of these people, but it does feel like Tyler, the Creator, is kind of channeling that energy into rap. And that's become more of a genre. I mean, Lupe Fiasco, you could argue, was like a skateboard rapper, but by another guy in there that I'm forgetting. But yeah, Tyler, the Creator kind of made way for, I don't know, a different genre of rap.
Yeah, he opened up like the whole like alt rap kind of thing, which is like a really big, it's what I guess I'm doing in a weird way. Cause like, I don't know. I think that is really a big lane now. It's like a big thing. So it's pretty interesting. It's, some of it's really good. Some of it's really bad. Like, it's, I don't know. So it's, yeah, it's interesting too, the way that the industry is moving as far as that goes. Like I'm noticing like with the Grammys, like a ton of new people who are like, who have been on the outskirts of the industry, have been like thrust forward into these, like, they're like the people now, you know, kind of, like Tyler was very on the outskirts for a very long time. And now he's like the guy, like the last few years, he's really been thrust into, you know, like fame almost.
He's, yeah, he's an industry guy now. He's played the game. He's played ball long enough. He's compromised to some extent, but, I don't know. It seems like he still retains some sort of individuality and uniqueness. Turning down the Jay-Z Diddy deal certainly gives him some credibility in some sense. But who knows? Maybe they were just trying to get at him and he was not about it. I mean, maybe he's got his own Diddy scheme that he's trying to start. He doesn't want to be a part of theirs, you know?
Yeah, yeah, very well could be.
Yeah. Well, is there anything else to go on as far as Tyler, the Creator, or what else do we got here? Because you're sort of alluding to some other folks, and the Grammys just happened, which I didn't watch, but I did see a little bit of my friend Donut's breakdown of the Grammys. You've talked to Donut before. And Yeah, there I saw something that looked like a Freemasonic compass just like right there in the background of the Grammys. That could have been like an AI image that they were using for the thumbnail, but I was like, whoa, that can't be real. The Freemasonic compass right there on the Grammys for everyone to see. It just seemed a little obvious.
Yeah, like the Grammys are one of those things where like I don't watch that kind of stuff. I wait to see what the general consensus is with like my bros in the Patreon and see. That's how I absorb things. I like see where people are at with them, and then I know to either look into it more or not to. And, you know, I really love White Lotus of Light, Ian Ferguson. I really love his work on sort of like the Malachian, Luciferian dichotomy and all that stuff that's like going on. And this ties in, I promise. So like looking at the Grammys, it really showed me that the work that he has done in discussing basically that there are three realms of consciousness that operate like on in Earth or on the world, right? And I don't know why I'm saying this so strangely, but it's like most high consciousness, then there's Luciferian consciousness under that. And then there's the Malachian consciousness under that. So sort of like the lowest low, Luciferians, like middle high. And then there's like most high, which is like a God consciousness, you know, as far as that goes. And he talks about how there's a shift coming on March 21st, 2025. And we're basically shifting from the Malachian consciousness, which is the lowest realm, into the Luciferian, which is the middle realm, where it's like not as bad as what's been going on. And the Grammys really like showed that's like really accurate, because all these artists who have never won before have won. Like off the top of my head, it's like Sabrina Carpenter, Chapel Roan, Charlie XCX, Doce. There's another girl like Karen Leon, like people who have like I have never even heard of, like are winning Grammys. And it's like a whole, the way I look at it is like it's like a new guard that's like coming to the forefront of the music industry. And it's interesting because like in my Patreon and the way that I've been viewing the industry since the Drake Kendrick beef is like that beef is sort of representing that there is a change going on within the music industry on like a really big fundamental level. And I just found it really interesting because it's like all these people are like winning. It's like all these like, you know, like everybody, like a year ago, everybody loved Drake, and now everybody's calling Drake a fucking pedophile. And it's like, it's just like a super crazy change, like all of a sudden, like overnight.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, let me take a quick second to tell you about our sponsors. First and foremost, our newest sponsor, Above Phone. That's right, Above Phone is helping you get above the normal digital ensnarement that is having and owning a phone. That's right, they created a totally private, digitally secure phone, and not just the phone, the tablet and the laptops are all encrypted and secure with open source software that puts you in control. Go and learn more about Above Phone. Search Above Phone wherever you browse the web. And when you check out, use the promo code CRAZY to save. Next up, we've got the Hit Kit, my favorite way to stay lit. That's right, with the Hit Kit and their wide variety of gadgets and gizmos designed for stoners and smokers alike, you can rest assured that whatever you're rolling up will stay right where you left it, safe and sound, right there next to your lighter. Don't get bicked again. Put your Bic in your Hit Kit. Go to The Hit Kit on Instagram or hitkit.us, wherever you browse the web, and be sure to use the promo code CRAZY at checkout. And last up, we've got Brain Supreme. Brain Supreme is your microdosing dream team, okay? They've got everything you need, and it's a well-rounded supplement, not just a get-you-high loophole, okay? This is a highly functional mushroom blend that you are going to love. So stop what you're doing right now. If you're interested in microdosing, go to brainsupreme.co and learn everything you need to know about microdosing, and be sure to use the promo promo code CRAZY at checkout. Remember, every episode of the My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast is ad-free when you sign up on Patreon, patreon.com/MFTIC. Be sure to visit through an internet browser, and we'll be right back to the interview after this quick break. Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you about my favorite new sponsor. That's Mood. I love Mood because they're providing affordable, accessible, convenient, and transparent cannabis that's 100% legal and grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. That's right, American cannabis for American listeners. And it's 100% legal. They've got a full selection of cannabis products. I was a huge fan of their Tangy flower. Wow, it really brought me back to when I first tried Tangy, and it was incredible. So if you have any doubts, try Mood for yourself, and I doubt you'll be disappointed. Use the promo code CRAZY and get 20% off your first order at mood.com. That's 100% federally legal cannabis, pesticide-free, delivered directly to your front door in a discreet package. Mood.com, promo code CRAZY, and trust me, folks, you're going to love this stuff. I give it the Mystic Mark guarantee. And Mood is going to back that up because not only do they stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, you get 20% off your first order with promo code CRAZY.
Well, it seems like what we were talking about in our last conversation, like this old guard, is all tied into Diddy. So if any of these, you know, brands like the Grammys want to stay relevant, I guess their only choice is to disassociate themselves with that whole pedigree of, you know, legacy artists, which Drake, I guess, is now being the fall guy for. But, you know, Drake, he's just like a Canadian actor, fake rapper. Like, he's not like the mastermind behind all of this, right? There's obviously guys like Lucian Graves and other, you know, big time record execs who were just as guilty but are not getting any publicity. I think P. Diddy, I guess his biggest fault was loving fame. You know, maybe if he just was one of these like EP guys, more like Russell Simmons. Well, Russell Simmons was in Run DMC, so he's famous too. But either way, if he was like, you know, one of these behind the scenes boardroom type record execs, would he even be getting this much heat? You know, like, probably not. I think it's a lot to do with P. Diddy being out in the open as this, you know. And it's crazy to look back, especially like the Nickelodeon footage of him, where like I saw one the other day where he's like looking through a window and he's like, "Hey, little kid," and the kid's like, the kid's like, "Oh gosh, P. Diddy's a teddy." Like, it's like literal, like, no, there's no other subtext to the joke other than this kid's alarmed by the fact that P. Diddy's looking through his window. Like, what else could that possibly mean? You know, it's just,
that's insane. I've never heard of that or seen that. I need to look that up.
Yeah, it's definitely, what was that, all that show, all that was, oh, like, okay, kind of Nickelodeon's version of Mad TV. I think it was a sketch from that show. And then there's the one that everyone's seen where P. Diddy tells a kid to put a remote control helicopter in another kid's pants, because, you know, that's a totally normal thing to do. That one made the rounds, like, previous to P. Diddy being arraigned and charged and now incarcerated. But yeah, it does seem like that is at the forefront of this, and maybe Kendrick Lamar capitalizing on that by, you know, making the smash hit of 2024 a song that calls out Drake as a pedophile. But yeah, it is interesting to see. I don't know any of the names of the people you mentioned who were winning Grammys. I think Chappell Roan is the only new artist that I'm somewhat familiar with, because she's been talked about on a couple podcasts. Yeah, it's the social media effect too, because you go and look at some of these people we've never heard of before, and they have millions of followers, and it's obviously it's international now because people speak English all over the world. People are obsessed with American culture, and they have all the more access to it through the internet. So it's like, it's not just the upper middle class of America going to these concerts. It's the upper middle class of the whole world who come and travel to come see these artists, right? So it's gone outside of the realm of what it was when maybe we were growing up in the 90s, when it was still insulated to what the American culture, MTV, and, you know, hadn't really made its way to the rest of the world aside from maybe Europe, you know?
No, yeah, 100%. It's like, it's funny you say Chapel Run sticks out to you because, like, I'm turning over kind of a new leaf with this, and I'm trying so hard, dude, to have grace with these people and, like, be not nice, but just, like, tell the truth, but be like, you know what? This is a person, and they're probably going through stuff. But Chapel Run drives me fucking nuts, dude, because, like, I've, like, looked into her, and she's one of these people where everything is, like, sort of just, like, a weird misdirect bullshit lie. Like, because the way that I look at it, right, is it's, like, in the music industry, there's a good chance that the person is a Nepo baby or has some sort of connection. That's almost like a default standard, right? So now I come into it looking at it like that. Like, okay, they probably know somebody. And Chapel Run does this thing where she, like, completely lies, like all of them do. And it's like her dad was, like, a Fed for 21 years, and now he's, like, a veterinarian. And they funded her to go to this camp called Interlaken, which was Jeffrey Epstein was, like, a frequenter of this camp. He would go to this camp. He funded this camp. He donated tons of money. He had a building that was the Jeffrey Epstein Ghislaine Maxwell building that had their name on it. Like, totally connected to these fucking psychopaths. And then she, like, has this song that's super famous called Pink Pony Club that she was signed at 17 years old. She was given a team of 6 writers. And then she got dropped because her music, no one gave a fuck about it in, like, you know, 2021 or whatever. And then this song kind of is released through Atlantic Records. And then she lies and says that she released it independently, which is, like, this big runaround lie. And then it's just, like, she drives me just fucking insane. And then there's this new thing, right, where, like, this whole new guard, all of them say that they're bisexual. Like, every single one of them says they're bisexual. But none of them have ever publicly dated anyone of the same sex. And Chapel Run is, like, one of these. And it's, like, this new prerequisite. It's, like, so... it's, like, who are you? I don't even believe any of the thing you're saying at all.
It's this new monoculture hive kind of thing where, yeah, I mean, I think we're around the same age, but people younger than us, they by standard look agender, right? Is that the right term? Agendered? Like, they're all going for this, like, very, you know, ambiguous look where, like, chicks look like dudes and dudes look like chicks. And obviously the LGBTQ woke stuff is, I don't know, it seems like it's dying. Who knows? Probably going to get reinvigorated now that Trump's in office, but seems like it's been, people are over it, but it's still, as you're putting it, a prerequisite that these people are, like, I don't know, default bi so that they don't alienate gays and lesbians and all the others from liking their music, I guess. Is that maybe the approach? Is like, all right, let's just be as ambiguous as possible because we don't want to offend anyone with our brand these days.
See, the way that I think about it is like, so Chapel Run is one of these people, and another one is Sabrina Carpenter. So oddly enough, right, like, they all say that they're independent. They're not, right? They're signed to a subsidiary that is a part of, like, Universal Music, like, the one of the biggest companies on the fucking planet, right? So it's like they're a part of these massive conglomerates. So there's that asset of it. But, like, what Sabrina Carpenter does, who is her label mate, right? They're signed to the same small indie label. Is she does this thing where, like, she'll do a show and she'll call out a fan and be like, hey, I can't help but notice you. You're, like, the prettiest girl I've ever seen. And you're just stunning. and in front of like 70,000 people. And then the girl is like all excited and freaking out. She's like 13 or whatever. And she's like, will say during the show, it's a part of her act. Like she does it every show. And it's like, I think what it really is, it's they're trying to appeal to really teenagers, right? These like younger women artists are appealing to these teenage audiences. And I think what it is, these teenagers are like so hormonal and they have so much going on that when they are a fan of somebody, they have all of these emotions towards this idol, this musician. And then when you bring on top of it, there's a chance that Chappell Roan or Sabrina Carpenter is going to have a crush on me and think I'm cute. And I might be at the show and she might point at me and say, "You're so pretty." I feel like the admiration and the idolization gets conflated with this like chance that it might be me. And it becomes this weird like sexualization thing. And I think it creates like hyper fans. That's like the way that I'm looking at it, as like cynically as possible. Because like you look at like fans of these particularly female artists, like Lana Del Rey is an example. They're like not normal, dude. Like they are, I have literally received dozens of death threats from doing my research on Lana Del Rey. I had a video about Lana Del Rey go like pretty viral. It got a couple million views. And I have like received legitimate death threats, like from people who are like, "Don't you dare say that about Lana." It's like crazy.
Whoa. First, they're on a first name basis with Lana, so you know they're serious.
Yeah.
Damn, bro. Yeah, I am not surprised by that. It's this hyper manipulative culture where, yeah, they're gamifying the emotions at play, these extreme, you know, emotions of being in that state of youth. I mean, I remember it. I was a sucker for it. Luckily,
oh, yeah.
My generation got, you know, into like, what was it, like Green Day and that type of music. So it wasn't so, I don't know, feminine as what's being pushed today. But yeah, no, there's definitely some strange stuff going on with the pop stars, particularly the females. What about the guys? I mean, if there are any, I know Post Malone has become in that same position as Tyler, the Creator, where he's like in the, he's like a legacy guy now. He's been around long enough. He's friends with the Austin comedy scene to some extent. He's been on Kill Tony. He's been on Joe Rogan. But I also heard recently that he's doing something with, is he doing something with Dave Grohl, like a Nirvana kind of thing?
Oh God, I got to be careful with this one. So yeah, like he played with Nirvana during COVID, and he did the whole like wearing a dress thing, pretending he's Kurt Cobain. That's like a big one.
Humiliating ritual.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Post Malone, he's very nice. He's a really nice person. I know that. And I don't know. I feel like, I don't know. Like the whole Dave Grohl thing is really fucking weird too, because like Dave Grohl, and I've talked about Dave Grohl a ton on this and Tinfoil Hat, so I don't want to go too much into it, but like that guy sucks so much. Like I found like even stuff I'd found before I, let me restart. He makes me feel so angry, dude. I found photos of him posing on a magazine called NME. And NME is like a music magazine. And he's holding the heads, his bandmates. And one of them is Taylor, the dude who died because he made his band get vaccinated. And it's like, there is something so fucking nefarious about Dave Grohl. Like it's every single thing you search on him, he has like a PR team covering for him. So when you look up anything, like I've talked about how his dad was a speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and all of this other stuff. And it's just like the dude is super nefarious. So if Post Malone is doing stuff with Dave Grohl, which I think he is, I hope he's careful, because like I really do think that Dave Grohl is like a legit dangerous person. I really do.
Well, I respect the caution then, because, yeah, that doesn't sound like somebody who is worried about much fallback from his actions if he's posing on a magazine cover with, and this was prior or after the
password? This is prior. This is from like 2000 and like I think like 2001, like really early. And it's really weird because there have always been rumors that Dave was involved in the death because of like just the way things worked out financially and how he already had the Foo Fighters lined up before Kurt died. And so like, I don't really know, obviously, like no one can know. But my theory is like, I really think that Dave was like some sort of fed or something or handler type of thing. And he saw the end of what was going on because he had the Foo Fighters lined up. He's from DC. He's from Washington, DC. And it's so funny when you look it up, right? Like I cover this in my Dave Grohl breakdown, but like Dave Grohl says that he's from Virginia. But when you look up like the DC area, he's literally just from Washington, DC. And his dad worked for Reagan. And it's like, dude, you're such a fucking liar. Like, it's just so many misdirects. It's insane.
Yeah. I forget. I was just talking to, I think it was Johnny Cerucci that told me something that, oh, yeah, it was Reagan who brought the Vatican back into the United States. So,
really?
Jesuits. Yeah. Connected to the Jesuits. So, yeah. Tangent there, but you brought DC and yeah, anyone from there. The thing about the Foo Fighters that always boggled my mind once I started learning about Dave Grohl is how on the nose that name is to like everything with the whole PSYOP, the world of Project Blue Beam. I mean, the Foo Fighters are like what the American soldiers were seeing the Nazis fly over Germany, supposedly, or they were orbs, or they were, you know, aliens. But then, of course, there's the Washington, D.C. flyover that happened in the post-war years. And yeah, so well, it is a stretch for sure, but maybe not with someone like Blink-182's Tom DeLonge, who's completely steeped in the world of what would we call it? The deep space programs and all this other stuff. Like he's
yeah,
completely gone left field out of the music industry. But yeah, maybe not as dangerous to talk about Tom DeLonge as it is. Maybe equally as dangerous. I mean, Tom DeLonge, seems like he's a pretty much Freemason, NASA, all that stuff.
Yeah. It's Dave Grohl is like, it's interesting because I do like an autistic amount of like studying my Instagram and like the statistics on it because it's essentially like the staple of like what I do, right? So like I notice I have like a very big file of like accounts and interactions with certain commenters. Like I know, like it's like crazy what I have going on. So I did a post on Dave Grohl and it got a lot of views like in the first day, like, you know, 200,000 views. And then ever since then, my account has just been like not popping the last like 3 weeks. And it's like directly related to me posting about him and talking about it. It's just like, it's just so obvious. Another one, another DC guy that's sort of tangential and related is Henry Rollins. I did not know what was up with that dude's dad, a real dad. So like, first of all, when you chat GBT Henry Rollins, like I'm like, oh, what's Henry Rollins' real name? And it's like, well, it's Henry Rollins. And I'm like, well, no, it's not. And I basically caught chat GBT covering up for Henry Rollins because his real last name is Garfield. And his father was a part of this like massive financial, I don't know the word for it, but like organization or something. It was a agency. That's what it was. He was a part of a financial agency that was like in charge of the oil crisis that we had in the 1970s because we were involved in some Israel-Egypt conflict or something. And his dad is like responsible for helping Nixon take us off the gold standard.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is Henry Rollins who, just for fun, traveled all over to these war zones. And, you know, after he did this punk rock anti-establishment music, he's like, yeah, let me just, you know, go around the world and travel and live this Anthony Bourdain kind of wannabe lifestyle, right? Like, that's
yeah, he's a total fed, dude.
Now.
Yeah, he's crazy. A total fucking And
yeah,
it's funny
just come
too.
Travel to, you know, Serbia, then we'll go to Jordan, then we'll go to Palestine. No big deal, you know, we're just traveling to war-torn countries. It's just tourism.
Yeah, and him, and like, the way that he joined Black Flag is exactly how Dave Grohl joined Nirvana, where it's like, the way he got into Black Flag is he got connected through a friend, and the singer of Black Flag quit or whatever, so he stepped in. The way that Dave Grohl got into Nirvana was the drummer, him and Kurt got in a fight or whatever, the drummer, and Kurt kicked him out. And then King Buzzo, who's the guy from the Melvins, who notoriously hates Kurt Cobain and is like super resentful, introduced him to Dave Grohl, and then Dave Grohl gets in the band. This is like, yeah, it's like, so it's the same exact thing. And then Courtney Love's a part of the Washington, D.C. music scene as well at that time.
Well, and we know her story. Her father was a general, was it? And he had been, you know, having her involved in some sort of operation before she was an adult, even.
And yeah, and he was the former manager of the Grateful Dead when they were called the Warlocks. Yeah. Fucking crazy, dude.
It all connects. Well, and what else is there about Henry Rollins? Because that's, yeah, interesting. Henry Garfield, rather. Does he have any in his post-music career years, anything strange? Because I know he's done the podcast rounds. I actually really liked some of his podcast interviews. I thought his travel, you know, stuff was interesting. But yeah, what have you interpreted with that?
So with him, like, it gets really weird, and it gets back to what I said with, like, Tyler, the Creator's friend passing. Henry Rollins had a friend, quote-unquote friend, who many people theorize might have been his lover, and which would make him gay, whatever. But people theorize that this guy that he was living with in Venice Beach, they were working on some sort of project, and they were on a walk at like 3 a.m. one night, and they got robbed. And this guy pulls out a gun, and he's like, hey, give me all your money or whatever. And Henry Rollins goes like, no way, I'm going to go inside, and I'll go get my wallet. So as he runs inside, the guy shoots his friend in the face and kills him. Well, what happens is Henry Rollins then took the guy's, like, head or something. I don't know exactly what happened, but Henry Rollins basically has, like, parts of this dude in, like, soil that he keeps next to his bed. He's literally talked about this. And the super weird thing is when you research this, like, you know, obvious insane tragedy, this is when he's hanging out with Courtney Love, because Henry Rollins and Courtney Love were notoriously friends. And at this is right around when Kurt died as well. And interestingly enough, Rick Rubin had been frequenting Rollins' Venice Beach house where, you know, this sort of happened. And they theorize that what happened is the guy who killed Rollins' friend had seen Rick Rubin's Rolls Royce, like, out in front of the house one night. So he figured whoever lives there has a bunch of money, and that's when he tried to rob them. But when I really researched this and I really looked into it, Rick Rubin is super into esotericism and the occult. And so it's really weird, because it's right, all of this stuff happens right before Henry Rollins starts his, like, acting career and starts doing the Henry Rollins, like, solo projects kind of thing. So it's like after Black Flag and in this weird middle period. And it just really, to me, it just looks like the sort of classical story of, like, a, not really like a destiny swap, but like a sort of like ritual sacrifice to, like, get fame or get whatever you want. That's what it looks like to me.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, we're all listening to this podcast probably thinking this to ourselves, like, well, I'm interested in esotericism. That doesn't make me, you know, necessarily likely to do anything nefarious. But yeah, what's the story with Rick Rubin? Because he does seem like I don't know. It's interesting. He seems like a kind of a Buddhist type character. Like, he's trying to put on this air that he's, like, very spiritually grounded, and that's how he's such a huge influence on all these artists. And I've always found him like substanceless when I have heard him talk. Like, it has never moved me listening to him. But I'm not a musician, so maybe that's part of it.
Yeah, so like, yeah, no, what you're, yeah, I'm not trying to say that anyone who's into esotericism or the occult, even the cult, is like up to anything nefarious. I guess, yeah, that's not what I'm inferring, because I am interested in that stuff as well. But like the thing with Rick Rubin, like, it's interesting because, and this will seem tangential, but it'll tie in. So like, Rick Rubin has also worked with the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and the Red Hot Chili Peppers notoriously are affiliated with River Phoenix's death. Because River Phoenix was given something by John Frusciante, and then he died at I believe it's the Viper Room, or it's one of those famous Hollywood clubs, and he notoriously overdosed. But the interesting thing is, before that, he had taken a photo with his hands sort of down at his sides that same day, which was on Halloween, which is the same exact photo of what an autopsy report looks like. So the photo he had taken that same day is exactly what an autopsy report photo looks like. He also had a star perforated into his right hand, which is Red Hot Chili Peppers logo, is a 8-pointed chaos magic star, which is super interesting. But all of this happens after they have an album called Blood Sugar Sex and Magic that Rick Rubin helped them produce. So Rick Rubin has this library in his house, and there are people who have gone and broken down shots from videos of him in his library. And a lot of the books are books about magic, about esotericism, are about sort of channeling things. And that's sort of his thing. So when he meets with these bands or these musicians, he is essentially trying to get them to channel what he calls source. Now, the reason I know what he's trying to do is because I've read his book. Now, what I've gone and done is I've actually read portions of the books that are in Rick Rubin's library on my Patreon, and I've like sort of tied it in with his actual book that he wrote. And one of the books that I've done this on, like that I've read from his library, it's almost like a verbatim copy in his book. And it's just him like talking about like channeling what he calls source. And it's like trying to channel things and tapping in and sort of getting in and getting it right. And like all these really vague terms that to me seems like you're channeling something obviously outside of yourself in order to have it come and be conveyed in your music. You know, so me personally, I'm a Christian. I have a Christian outlook on the world, all this other stuff, blah, blah, blah. And when I think of channeling something, I don't necessarily think that is, in my worldview, that's good. That doesn't mean that it's bad, but it means that it is something that is other spiritually. You know, so that's Rick Rubin's whole thing. And I just find it interesting that he's so closely associated with all of this craziness.
Yeah. Well, and there's other things with Red Hot Chili Peppers as well. I think we mentioned that in a previous conversation because I used to be a big fan of their music. And I mean, I guess I still can be, but it's really hard to separate, you know, the artist from the art when you learn all this stuff. And maybe, you know, spoiler alerts doesn't quite define it, but something to that effect for the people who listen to shows like this, where you go back to your Spotify playlist or Apple Music playlist, and you're like, ah, gotta delete that guy out of here, because this is just a bummer to think about, you know. And maybe people can separate it. I'm not the type that can, I guess. But yeah, I reviewed listening to them, and again, like, it's interesting. The music has an effect on you, and I think that's what these people are capitalizing on. The Rick Rubin world of, it's similar to David Lynch, which he passed away recently. Maybe in a different realm altogether, but he was well known for his transcendental meditative interests. And I think Rick Rubin can be broadly defined in that same sort of category of vaguely Eastern spirituality. But in that realm, you know, is hidden a lot of dark and occult stuff. Like people, when they think of Eastern spirituality, they think of, like, you know, the yin yang symbol and some really peaceful monks and things like that. But, you know, we've talked about on this show, the whole gamut of occult strangeness exists in Asia too, from demon possession to blood rituals and, you know, afterlife things, you know, all these sorts of strange, you know, body and all of it. So, you know, there's a little bit of a synthesis that's going on where, you know, what might be, you know, really dark is sugarcoated as, oh, well, it's a meditative practice, you know, and unless you speak Chinese, Japanese, or whichever other language, maybe Bhutanese, Tibetan, right? Like, unless you read those languages and can translate them, like, maybe you're not fully tapped in to what's going on, because your average Barnes & Noble or bookstore is not going to have the, you know, dark Eastern occult stuff. They're just going to have, like, the Tao Te Ching and, you know, maybe Confucianism, a couple of other general things. But yeah, it gets really dark with the Eastern occult stuff. Again, I don't want to paint it all a dark light. I think the more podcasts I do, the more I've sort of grown to be wary of all of that and less not interested. I'm still interested, but not in the sense of being a practitioner, more in the sense of being an observer or a student, a historian of it. Yeah, it seems like that's really at the heart of a lot of these successful musicians, which begs the question for me, like, for someone in your position or a couple friends who have a band, and like, is there really any lane for someone to become a famous musician without the trappings that, you know, it seems like these successful people have themselves stuck within, whether that's, you know, these weird pacts that they make with the devil potentially, or secret groups, you know. Obviously, there's these strange deaths connected to a lot of these people, and then the symbolism that goes along with it. Like, do you think it's like these people see, oh, okay, the symbolism is a key to success, and they start mirroring that, and then it becomes a part of them? Like, or is it just like completely nepotism? You're in this sort of other lane. Because guys like Dave Grohl, I get the sense that he's like an elite. Like, he doesn't think of himself, he doesn't relate to the people who listen to his music. You know, he sees himself as like landed gentry, and we're just all serfs.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting. Like, this is something I have to think about a lot, because this, the way that I like look at what I do is like, this is the conspiracy research journalistic side of it is almost like my job. And then like the music stuff is almost like my passion. That's like how I look at it. And I've been super blessed to where I can do this more full time now. And, you know, it's really amazing. It's awesome. But I really have to look at it really realistically, because I think that if I was to, you know, capitalize on the music thing perfectly, it would be really difficult for me to like become quote unquote famous, you know, like, I think that the way that I'll put it is like, there's absolutely the nepotism and there is absolutely the spiritual side of it. So like, you have to be one or the other. You usually have to be both. But I do feel like, because we are entering this new changing of the guard, I think there is now space for someone like me, or someone who might just be like, the way that I look at this, like for me personally, this is like a literal crusade. Like, I think this is a spiritual war, and I think that I'm on a certain side of it. And that's how I look at it. And it's like, I'm going to be myself. I have a Christian worldview. I'm Christian. I love Jesus Christ. That's my Lord and Savior. And if people don't like it, you know, whatever. my music isn't inherently like Christian or over the top Christian or anything, but it's like, I look at it like I'm an outsider who is doing my own thing. And if, you know, Travis Scott called me and was like, I would love for you to open for me. That's like, that's probably not going to happen, but it would be pretty cool. Right. So that's just how I look at it. And I think that there are people who can get lucky. And I do think that there are lanes opening up that if you are really good enough and you really do package what you're doing well, I think anyone can do anything now. Because like a really great example is the Suicide Boys. So the Suicide Boys started off like literally talking about like them being demons and sent from hell and they're, you know, evil and shit and they're drug addict evil and they love drugs, blah, blah, blah. But interestingly enough, they had this like super change of heart and they both got sober and they're both like Orthodox Christians now. And they've changed all of their lyrics to being positively spiritual, not inherently Christian or anything. And they were a top 10 touring hip hop act in 2024. So obviously they're an outlier, but I think that's just how it is now. And I really do think that like this really low vibrational Malachian, P. Diddy, Drake, you know, stuff is really falling off. And I think that there is space for that now. And it's like, I would love to be able to do more music full time. And that's obviously like a goal and everything. But it's not really, for me, it's not really about like famous or anything. It's more just like, I want to make the coolest shit possible. And I don't want to be like a Dr. Seuss. I want to really show people like, even down to like the font size that I chose on this visual is this number because of it. Like, I want to get really, you know, and I think that's what it needs to be sort of in the forefront is real artistry with intentionality. I think that's what people want, you know?
Down to the detail. I like that. And yeah, for too long, this stuff has been relegated to people who seem to have this occult underlining kind of factor to their work, whether that is instilled in them through the record labels or just a part of becoming in that world of celebrity. Yeah, it seems like hopefully the old guard is going to die and a lot of that stuff is going to die with it. With this new guard, is there any of that symbolism going on? Because I mean, outside of like the hardcore genres, and again, like I'm not going to pick on those genres because there's a lot of sweet people who are really kind and love that music and they listen to it because it's like a, you know, an output for a lot of those negative emotions. It's just not my thing, but that's not necessarily a cult, right? Like, I don't know that these occult symbolism type of things were ever on the forefront of popularity. They've just been there in the background subtly indicating something, right? Like they're almost like calling cards to this secret society lingo.
Yeah. I think that, yeah, like I agree with what you said. And I think, you know, there are artists now and it's cool. Like there's an artist, his name's Blady and he's like really big. He's part of a group called the Drain Gang, right? And he got big with, you might've heard of Young Lean before. Yeah, he's like friends with Young Lean and he's really into like esotericism. So he'll have like, you know, like stories about like Gnosticism and like Abraxas and St. George slaying dragons. So there's like this little lane of esotericism, although it is very surface level, that is cropping up that's really interesting and really cool. And I think that you're going to see a proliferation of that coming in the next like 10 years. I think it's going to get pretty big because, you know, we're in this age of things coming to light, you know, and I really think that's going to continue.
Well, and also the DIY approach has never been more available in some sense. It's not easy. I was going to say easy, but it still takes skill to be, you know, popular, right? People aren't going to just go for garbage music anymore, because that's a lot of what was coming through these record labels, because it was all formulaic and, you know, let's do whatever's most efficient to get the biggest effect and spend the least amount of money. Maybe that will go away, hopefully. But I feel like I've steered the conversation away from your notes. Is there anything that we've been leaving off the table that you want to get into?
No, you're good. We actually hit like all my notes. So yeah, I was like trying to see if there's anything else. No, that's pretty much it. Like, honestly, it's a cool time. And I think that, yeah, I think it's a really cool time. And a lot of what I am doing with like this whole crusade thing with the music industry is like, I think sometimes people think I like hate all of these people. And it really is like, I think it's, if you know where it's coming from, you know that it can't take you anywhere if you don't allow it. You know, like if you listen to Black Sabbath and you understand what Mr. Crowley is about, you know, it might not be able to take you on Crowley's Wild Ride or whatever. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, it is important to have these things unveiled. And from there, they don't have as much of an effect on us. I'm with that 100%. But I don't know, I just can't shake it with the way the music industry is geared these days. Like, I get the sense, like, all right, the more I listen to this stuff on Spotify, I am actually helping them somehow. So I don't want to help them. I'd rather help like new artists, people who are just putting their stuff out there. So yeah, as far as names to look out for, Bladey is one that you mentioned. What was the group you said that had like a huge shift and now they're Orthodox Christian, the rappers?
The Suicide Boys.
Suicide Boys, yeah.
And these dudes are fucking based, because my Instagram account, like, it does really good numbers. Like, I know for a fact, like, famous people have seen some of my stuff. And the Suicide Boys reached out to me and were like, dude, what you're doing is fucking dope. And so that's how I know that, like, oh, these guys are fucking, this is cool. Like,
yeah.
Because it's like, I don't know. That's pretty wild, dude. I don't know. I would be worried if there was a dude like researching into the level I do, like everybody, you know, like if I had some shit. So I think like, that's pretty cool that they did that. I don't know.
Well, and on that note, I know that the whole Kendrick Lamar thing is pretty surface level. There's not really much esoteric stuff to dive into with the They Not Like Us song, but I heard that the Super Bowl performance had all of these like subtle digs at Drake. Is that all that was? Is there anything strange or esoteric about that? Because we had Gene Hackman pass away recently, and some people have called that out. I mean, it's very strange when you read the details of him and his wife both just dropping dead and they have no idea how. Like, it's just crazy. So is there any possible connection to that? Because I saw some meme that was putting Hackman in there with Kendrick Lamar somehow. I didn't have time. Look, it wasn't on your account, but it was somewhere else. It was like a conflating the two. I don't know if they're...
Yeah, no, I haven't heard or seen anything like that. The Kendrick Lamar performance was pretty, like, I don't know, I think it was really political. The one thing about it that was refreshing was there was no, like, straight-up, like, Malachian blood ritual, like, referencing, you know? Like, I feel like the last 10 years, every show has been, like, literally throwing up the fucking Freemasonic triangle and, you know, there was none of that, which was like nice. I personally feel like the whole They Not Like Us thing is like I think it's literally referential to Kendrick Lamar being like a Black Hebrew Israelite and Drake being Jewish. And I think it's like a literal Hebrew like war thing. I've done like a whole video on it. I think that's what that kind of is. But yeah, like other than that, it was pretty just like a political thing and calling Drake a pedophile, having, you know, the whole stadium say A minor is
yeah. Well, and it's funny you use the term political, because yeah, the Black Israelites and everything going on right now as far as what people are concerned with in Israel, Palestine, definitely has that sort of occult link there. But the Black Israelites, it's interesting. I haven't done a huge deep dive on them. I remember running into them in New Haven and the town area and then learning a little bit about them. But other than, like, you know, their strange legends about Americans, about Black people or African Americans actually being just Americans or Native Americans, that's like the one thing I know about the Black Israelite thing. But Kendrick Lamar, is he a Black Israelite?
So I don't know if he is, but he has a cousin. His name is Carl Duckworth, and he's featured on some of Kendrick's songs. And in those songs, Kendrick essentially alludes to Black Hebrew Israelite ideologies, and literally to the point where he's quoting Deuteronomy and he's quoting scripture, Old Testament scripture. And I think that comes into play a lot in the They Not Like Us thing, because I feel like Kendrick Lamar has this really weird thing where he is like borderline prophetic, and the things that he says sometimes have like literally quadruple entendres. And it's like, it's very interesting. Like, I have this belief that reality is quantum in this weird way, and it's convoluted and it makes no sense if I talk about it, but like, I really think Kendrick is tapped into something along those lines, and I feel like he is the new sort of chosen one, quote unquote, for the music industry as we move into this new age. And I think that the Drake Kendrick beef was essentially to showcase the changing of the guard, the falling off of the Diddy guard, and Kendrick is now the like guy, I guess. That's my thoughts on like Kendrick and the and all of that. But he does quote Black Hebrew Israelite ideologies, yeah, for sure. So
yeah, I'm curious about that. It is connected to some pretty deep esoteric stuff, and obviously connected to that whole, you know, Native American theory. I don't know. That's a loose connection that I'm putting on there. I know that Kendrick's concerned with that. Yeah, it is interesting to see that becoming, you know, a part of the popular zeitgeist, because for a long time it was just like comedians who would laugh about, like, you know, on like radio prank shows, they'd call the Black Israelites and, you know, rile them up or whatever, or you'd get heckled by them as you walked around cities. But yeah, it's interesting. I think there's something connecting them to the Masons, and maybe that has something to do with it, because the average football fan doesn't understand those triple, quadruple entendres. They're not watching it thinking, you know, at the most they're like, oh yeah, Ken, you know, they know about the Drake Kendrick thing. But I think most people saw that and were probably confused. Like, I don't know, unless they know all of the Drake stuff, they're probably just like, no, I don't understand what's going on. They're kind of, you know what I mean?
Just kind of like, what the hell is this? Get this out of here.
Yeah, like, it's not like a, it's not like a hit, like a smash hit song, like from like a couple decades ago where it was like very obvious what the song is about. I don't know. Maybe that's this internet age, another side effect of it, which I like. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. I'm just really tapped out of all this pop culture stuff, and I appreciate learning a little bit about it with you. But tell the audience where they can go to follow up with you on your deep dives, and maybe they'll find that their favorite artist is connected to some shady shit, or maybe not. Maybe
or maybe not, So, yeah, my Instagram is at Izzy N. Griffin, but most of my work is on my Patreon now, patreon.com/IzzyNGriffin. I do deep dives on, it's going to be everybody eventually. I'm doing one deep dive a week, which is a lot of work, but I really enjoy it. And then I have my first album, I guess, is coming out on April 21st, 2025. It is called Glue. And my artist name is just Izzy N. Griffin. And yeah, that's it. I'm going to be promoting that album for quite a while, because My older music is, it's not really, that's on Spotify compared to what's coming is like not good. So what I have coming out is like, it's one of these things where I'm like, I'm literally so proud of it that if nobody listened to it, I would like, it would, I'd be like, okay, it's that good. I'm that proud of it. So that's yeah, exciting. I'm really stoked. I'm very excited. Yeah. So.
Right on, dude. Yeah. Well, I'm excited to listen to it for 2021-2025. I'm sure there's something numerical about that and why you chose that, but we'll let you allow people to decipher that when the album's out. But cool, man. Gloom, GLU with the umlaut M, and that's going to be yes. available on Spotify, Apple Music, all the places. So cool. Thank you, Izzy. It's always cool to have you on the show, and I am a Patreon supporter, so folks, join me over there and support Izzy on his deep dives. Until next episode, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was our fourth conversation with Izzy Griffin, and you can find Izzy Griffin on Patreon at Izzy N. Griffin. You can find him by the same name on Spotify. That's where you can find his music. And his other podcast, The Heads, which is available on YouTube and Spotify and all the places. Big shout out to Izzy, like him or not. He is unveiling some pretty profound and strange, disturbing stuff about all of these people that we thought were just normal musicians. Turns out some of them have some major skeletons in their closet, so... yeah, very weird stuff. You can find Izzy on Instagram as well, where he posts a ton of stuff in this realm as well. So lots of great stuff on the way. Episode 500 is coming up. We've got a very interesting guest potentially coming on the show for that, and a lot of really awesome stuff between now and then. So stick with us, and I will see you on the next episode. Be sure to sign up on patreon.com to see every episode of My Family Thinks I'm Crazy podcast early, the video version of the show, the audio version of the show, ad-free, interruption-free. Sign up patreon.com/MFTIC, wherever you browse the web, not through the Apple podcasting app. We don't want to give them an unnecessary cut. And yeah. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to follow me on X at MFTIC Podcast or on Instagram at My Family Thinks I'm Crazy. Support the show with a 5-star rating and review. Comment if you're listening on Spotify. Let me know why you love the show, or maybe even why your family thinks you're crazy. All right. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you on the next episode. Until then, immerse yourself in the moment wherever you are in the now. MFTIC. Broadcasting the moon matrix from the lunar surface. They want you confused like you never knew your purpose. Hopping through the portals, dismantling the machine. My family thinks I'm crazy, I can't believe what I've seen. Memories of a war, the Pleiadians and Anunnaki. Stuck within the genes of a copy of a human body. DNA fractal, the universe within me. Epiphanies of science is hoarded by the Illuminati. Puppet masters know the power of the mantra. Repeating mad lies till it has an effect on ya. Subliminal messages hijack your perception. Tricking the population with holographic projections. We see through it, and the system is unraveling. I'm astral traveling through the library of the Vatican. On a sacred journey, I embark with the squad. Forever spitting truth like Mark on the pod. Gotta know the facts, never hold back. Cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. Dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade. I awoke in a deep underground military base. Zero recollection of how I got to this place. Alien corpses floating in glass cylinders. Must have been extracted when they crashed into us. Animal hybrids contained in the cages. A lion with the eagle head. Monkeys with reptilian faces. Losing my mind and I'm feeling desperate. I look around the room and I see no sign of an exit. All of a sudden the wall flickers away, revealing a hangar full of spacecraft. My get
got away. I run to the nearest one. See a guard, knock him out, rob him for his plasma gun. Hop in the ship, take the controls. They highly intuitive, I figure it out easily. Lift off, accelerate through a tunnel until I see the light. Fly into the sky, get flanked by six F-35s. Gotta know the facts, never hold back. Cause I ain't getting caught up in the soul trap. Dissect the fabric of reality, looking for the answers, searching through the galaxy. You might be feeling stressed out. Depression, anxiety is no measure of health to be well adjusted to a sick society. You don't even know how powerful you are. We the ones who gonna expose the whole facade.